Yeah. Movie review time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can also check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. Every Monday morning we review the movies. We got a lot to talk about. We got the box office report, and let's welcome Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Let's first talk about this box office for this week. What the hell, man? $90 million for American Sniper?
Yeah.
What the hell is going on, man?
You're looking at perfect advertising. That's my explanation.
God. I mean, I was stunned when I saw those numbers. I mean, you had to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been saying for weeks that the movie was going to have a monster launch. I thought it was actually going to have the biggest January ever. But by saying that, I was thinking maybe 45 million.
Yeah.
Not 90.
I mean, my God. That's obviously Clint Eastwood's biggest opening ever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like sixth or seventh all time on his list already.
I just don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. And it's got to be a mighty opening to topple the great Kevin Hart. from the top spot. And Kevin Hart's movie made a lot of money. $21 million is nothing to sneeze at for The Wedding.
Yeah.
And Paddington did well, too.
Very well.
Yeah. So it was a big weekend for box office.
And these figures aren't even figuring in the holiday yet. This is just the 3-day.
That's true. That's true. I mean, this is a big weekend, man. I mean, mm-hmm. lots of people went to the movies, except a lot of people didn't see Michael Mann's movie.
Yeah. Most people in America did not.
Black Hat made $4 million, only $86 million less than American Sniper.
Yeah, there's a very good chance that Black Hat is going to make less money than Manhunter did in 1986.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you're saying that it's just it was the advertising campaign that really did it for American Sniper.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that the way that they have been advertising, I mean, this thing has been in limited release for 3 weeks now on only 4 theaters in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the way, if you look at the way this thing has been advertised on television, for one, it's almost like a little teaser campaign. They've just been sort of giving you little tidbits about, I mean, and selling the movie very well. It's like clearly, you know, it's about a sniper and he's got a wife, and it's a movie that sort of appeals to, I think, both pro-war and anti-war people, the way they've been advertising it. It also plays up the action quotient of the film by also playing up the relationship aspect. So I think men and women were enticed by this thing. And, I mean, Bradley Cooper is kind of a thing now.
Yeah.
So, you know, throw all that together, and even though Clint Eastwood is a name, you know, clearly he's never had a hit quite like this before. And then you throw all those things in together, and it just seemed like it became the movie to see.
Crazy.
Yeah, I remember Lone Survivor did very well last January, too, which is one of the reasons I thought that this film, and I mean, even Zero Dark Thirty, when it first opened, did very well.
Right.
So it seems January is a time to release movies like this. Mm-hmm. It's such a dead period that kind of a high-concept film like this will do very well, and, you know, clearly, you know, someone paid attention.
So one of Clint's biggest openings at this time was Gran Torino, and it was but that was only like $28 million, right?
$29 million, yeah, and went on to $148 million.
Good Lord!
So that's going to fall by next weekend.
That's insane! Wow, I was, you know, when I saw the numbers, man, I really, my jaw hit the floor. $90 million for American Sniper. That's really unbelievable.
Second biggest R-rated opening of all time.
What was the first?
Matrix Reloaded.
Oh, good Lord. What did the Matrix Reloaded make?
91.7.
Wow.
Yeah. Number 3, Hangover Part 2.
Oh, God.
That's what I would have guessed. Yeah. I thought that was going to be number 1.
Yeah. So Bradley Cooper now owns 2 of the 3 biggest R-rated openings of all time.
All right. Well, listen, since we're talking about American Sniper, Colin, why don't you tell us about it?
All right. Well, this is, like we said, the Clint Eastwood movie. And let's remind everybody, he's 84 years old. I don't know why, I just think that's important.
He's 84 years old. He's 84 years old, and he directed two movies last year. The guy's unbelievable.
And these aren't small little character movies either. These are like big budget mega studio blockbusters. Jeez, man. All right. Well, this anyways. Bradley Cooper is a guy who plays a guy who, at the age of 30, decided to enroll in the armed forces and ended up as a Navy SEAL. And, well, after 9/11, he went to war in Afghanistan and Iraq on four separate tours of duty by being an expert sniper. He's pretty much the best in the field. But those separate tours ended up taking a toll on his home life. Before going to war, he married a woman that he met in a bar, played by Sienna Miller. They have a couple kids, and with each tour, he becomes more estranged from his marriage and family. But he sees it as his calling and obligation to do these tours. He doesn't see it any other way. Film is based on a true story, based on a memoir by the real guy. So with that, like I said, I said this wasn't a character, small character film, but it is pretty much a character study of a guy who is compelled to go to war and fight for his country no matter what. I don't think it's a political film, and I also don't personally believe every war film has to be an anti-war film. The Hurt Locker is a perfect example of a movie that is neither here nor there on that. And this movie seems to be the logical comparison point. Cooper's character, as it's written here, I thought came off pretty one-dimensional and just doesn't seem interesting enough to carry this kind of narrative. I never felt like there was any real suspense when he was in battle. And he keeps himself so guarded from everybody around him, which I know is the point of the film, but it also from the audience, that it, for me, I just felt, completely at arm's length from this guy. I think Cooper's very good in the film. I think the film starts out pretty strong, and there are some battle scenes here and there, but by the end of the film, I didn't really know why his story needed to be told. And I know this is kind of a strange thing to say that is based on a true story, but the film is just kind of made up of a lot of war movie cliches. And I know that they're telling the story. It's a true story. I get that. I know it's a weird thing to say, but still, by the end of the film, I wasn't sure why this guy's story really needed to be told. I didn't feel like the film made a good case for that. I can't really recommend this. So.
Okay, let's go to Eric. Eric, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with Colin on this one. And the way Colin was sort of talking about how it was sort of weird to call it a true story. Anyone following the sort of some of the controversies and about the inaccuracies about the film, that's almost a fascinating story in and of itself. That stories that clearly are not touched upon within the film, but the amount, the bigger the lie, the bigger, the more people will believe them. Sort of stories that this guy Chris Kyle has told to people kind of makes you wonder about some of the other things in the book, which this film is based upon. But that's recent history. When I saw this film, pretty much like 2 months ago, almost now, practically, I walked out of the film thinking that this was sort of a nothing screenplay, that this was a film that, like Kyle said, it doesn't really touch upon who this guy really was. And it's a film that doesn't really have the guts to take a position. Like Colin said, that's okay to an extent. But then if the movie isn't going to take a position on what this guy's doing or our place in the war or anything like that, then it has to give us sort of a real sense of the guy itself, and you know, the sort of the soldier on the ground mentality that a film like The Hurt Locker, you know, does very well. There are individual pieces in the movie that work, moments involving decisions he has to make as a sniper. But then the film also gives us this sort of this arbitrary villain, this other sniper, almost like it becomes an enemy at the gates type movie at some point. That I think none of that really works very well. And then, you know, the stuff that is teased about in the trailer between him and his wife is the sort of the old, not just war hero type cliches, but, you know, just any dangerous profession. Cop movies all have the scenes where the wife is worried about the husband and the husband, you know, doesn't want to listen to the wife and all that stuff. All very standard scenes. And then you get to the ending, which, if you know anything, again, about the real story, the movie not only sort of cheats on the sort of the irony of the ending. I think that if that was something that was sort of teased about throughout the film, I thought it would have been a better approach instead of coming up with this epilogue that feels like a scene out of Hot Shots where the guy's like walking under the ladder and the black cat's walking by him and stuff. It's a scene that is so poorly telegraphed and poorly written, and there's a person involved who's very sweaty and twitchy that you would never leave the house with. So it's unfortunate the movie would end on that beat and then not even play up the tragic aspect of the story. So it's a miss.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back, and then you'll get my review of it, American Sniper, which made $90 million over the weekend. You guys hang on, okay? Eric and Colin are here. We're talking about the movies. It's movie review time on a Monday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. More coming up right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Flickers of light in the sky. Movie reviews continue on this Monday morning. We're talking about American Sniper, Clint Eastwood's new movie with Bradley Cooper, which cleaned up big time at the box office over the weekend. Colin reviewed it and wasn't crazy about it. Eric, your review is almost exactly word for word what I was thinking.
Mm.
You know, and you guys know how much I love Clint, and
yeah.
You know, I love his movies. I think this is a misfire, no pun intended.
Uh-huh.
I got to tell you this though. I think Bradley Cooper is quite good in this movie. I think it's a really terrific performance, and by the way, he nailed that accent. Let me just say that. But I totally agree with you that the introduction of the bad sniper dude made no sense whatsoever. Now, there are sequences, because Clint's a great filmmaker, and there are sequences in this movie that are pretty powerful, that are pretty effective, that are pretty, you know, suspenseful. So there are sequences that are well done, but it never adds up to a whole. The domestic stuff doesn't work. So, yeah, I was hugely disappointed with this movie because I was really looking forward to it. And, it's not good. It's just not a good film. But, man, $90 million. Holy.
Clearly doesn't matter what we think.
Doesn't matter what we think.
No.
The audience has spoken.
So $90 million and 6 Oscar nominations.
Incredible, man.
Yeah.
Incredible. All right, let's go to Eric. Tell us about A Most Violent Year.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about this one a couple
times. Yeah, yeah. This is the latest film from J.C. Chandor, who's had some success over the last few years with the first film called Margin Call, and then with All Is Lost with Robert Redford. And this story takes place in 1981. Oscar Isaac plays a guy who runs an oil magnet or an up-and-coming oil magnate and runs an oil company in New York City. And he's trying to expand his business by buying this piece of land that's going to give him greater access to oil that's coming in and out of the city. Problem is that his trucks, and specifically his drivers, continue to get hijacked. And that's just one of the many sort of shenanigans that are going on that are sort of preventing him from running basically a clean business. He's being hassled by union guys who want to arm his drivers. He has a wife played by Jessica Chastain who not just very loyal to him, but has some seedy connections.
Who, by the way, got robbed from an Oscar nomination by Meryl Streep.
Agreed.
That's all I'm saying.
Agreed. Yep. Yes. yeah, we're all agreed there. And she has some seedy connections in her past, and she is not afraid to do the sort of the dirty work that her husband just wants to sort of avoid, and there are some issues there. Albert Brooks plays the lawyer. David Oyelowo, who's plays Martin Luther King in Selma, plays district attorney. Is he the district attorney?
Yeah, he's the DA. He's the DA. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Who's investigating his company? And there are a lot of other really good actors around this film. And this is a film that, you know, when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, I mean, the name that should, you know, has to come up, and it's probably come up in every review of this movie, is Sidney Lumet.
That's right.
And it was watching the movie, at the end of the movie, it's like, oh, wow, that was a Sidney Lumet movie from 1981. Yeah. That's exactly what this movie feels like. That's a pretty good way to start. It's a film that I think succeeds greatly on the strength of its performances. Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain particularly are really good in the film. I don't know if the film adds up to as much as I maybe wanted it to. It's a sort of a character study. A character study I think we've kind of seen before in many respects. But it doesn't really detract from, you know, what's pleasurable about this movie. And it's kind of a straightforward drama. It's got some thriller aspects, and it's got some chase scenes and some it's a little bit of mystery behind it. But ultimately, it comes down to sort of a very interesting character study in a very particular time and place. That's, you know, more than enough to recommend this film.
All right, Colin.
Yeah, for me, that's a lot to recommend. I mean, for me, this is, you know, it was number 12, I think, on my top 20 for this year, for 2014. Big part of it is the performances. A big part of it is the atmosphere. I love, you know, that it feels like a Sidney Lumet film. That's such a high compliment. I think the script is pretty terrific at keeping the audience guessing, even though it's not really a mystery. I mean, it kind of is, but there are some red herrings in there. But there's nothing in the form of like a bad guy who, you know, who's always popping up and you think has something to do with anything. No, there's just all these little things going on that you're not quite sure, you know, if it's all part of one big conspiracy, and like the characters don't know. So you're right with Oscar Isaac the whole time. You don't want him to, you know, fall prey to being, lured into this sort of gangster mentality. I found the movie just really engrossing in that way. So definitely a big recommendation for me. But right now it's only playing at the Landmark Century, the River East, and the Evanston. It's worth seeking out. Definitely go see it.
I agree. I love this movie. I think it's terrific, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when we were given our lists, and it was definitely on my list as one of the best films of the year. I thought it was terrific, and I think the performances are extraordinary. Jessica Chastain is just a badass in it. That's the only term I can use. She's a total badass in it. And Oscar Isaac, to me, is channeling Al Pacino. You know, Al Pacino, like, in his 30s. And, yeah, we mentioned Sidney Lumet, and it does feel that way. The only thing that I was distracted by was Albert Brooks' hair. because it's straight in the movie. But I think it's a terrifically made movie. The mood is terrific. I was compelled the entire time. And there are sequences in this movie, some of the best acting of the year. There's a sequence in this movie where first of all, one of the biggest jumps, including any horror movie that came out last year, I about jumped out of my skin during one scene in this movie, and you guys know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was sitting on my couch watching the movie, and I would just couldn't believe it. And there's a sequence that happens after that jump. That involves Jessica Chastain and a gun, and then they're back at home, and the scene between the two of them after that gun sequence, I think, is one of the best acted scenes of the year between the two of them. Watching those two just go at it, absolutely amazing stuff. I just think it's a terrific film, and I think everybody should check it out. A Most Violent Year. I was extraordinarily disappointed that Jessica Chastain didn't get nominated. I think this movie, did it get any nominations? Didn't get any nominations, did it?
No, zero.
You know, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. But anyway, it's out there. It's at three theaters. Seek it out. It's called A Most Violent Year. And I thought it was one of the best movies of 2014 and a really great crime drama that does evoke those great Sidney Lumet movies of the late 70s and early 80s. No question about it. So I think it's terrific. All right, you guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Eric and Colin are here, and we're going to review more movies coming up right here on 720 WGN. Movie reviews are happening right now. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, they join me every Monday morning to review all the new movies. And we take a look at the box office, which we did already, and now we've got some other movies to review. So let's bring back Eric and Colin. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. Colin, I believe you're the only one who went to go see the fantastic Kevin Hart movie.
Yeah, I
did not see it. The Wedding Ringer. By the way, pretty solid SNL, though.
You thought?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty solid. I laughed pretty consistently during it.
I like the Kate McKinnon stuff.
Well, come on, Kate McKinnon, for God's sake.
Yeah.
It's like,
she's terrific.
She's unbelievable, man, and she just keeps getting better every week.
Mm-hmm.
She's brilliant. All right, Colin? Wedding
All
Ringer.
Right. All right, so Kevin Hart plays a guy who makes a living getting hired to be the best man at weddings for guys who don't have a lot of friends.
And I have not seen this movie. But every commercial that I've seen or every trailer that I've seen, immediately Hitch comes to mind.
Right.
That's the first thing that pops into my head is Hitch.
Yeah, that's fair. And this concept, it's so far-fetched, but when you've been to as many weddings as I have, you do believe a guy like this can and does exist. But anyway, so he gets fired by such a guy, played by Josh Gad, who's about to marry a woman who looks on the surface to be, you know, too good for him. But he really doesn't have any friends. He's a full-time stockbroker guy who never really had time for social life, but now has to put up this front for his fiance. So he talks Kevin Hart into hiring six or seven more guys to act as his groomsmen. And it's he recruits a very odd-looking bunch of guys because Kevin Hart also doesn't have that many friends. They all have to sort of learn their scripts and learn the backstory of their friendship in case anyone corners them at the reception and asks about their past with Josh Gad. And they have a couple weeks to prepare for everything. And Kevin Hart meets, you know, the fiance. He's puts up a front as being a priest, and you know, has to sort of maintain that charade. So the movie sounds, like you said, like Hitch, and there's that aspect of it. Of course, the two guys, you know, Kevin Hart doesn't want to make it anything but business, but eventually, you know, a friendship develops between him and Josh Gad, and it does become more of a male bonding film. And the six or seven guys that, you know, he puts together to, you know, play the other guys is actually... some funny stuff comes out of that because they really do look like a very weird group of guys that you'd see at a wedding, all dressed in tux. And every time anybody sees them and gets a look at them and wonders, what, these are your friends? It's actually kind of funny every time that happens. So this movie is not the, you know, January piece of garbage that you would expect, you know, at least that's what I was expecting going in. Maybe it helps that I had really low expectations. The movie does have some laughs, you know, some pretty big ones, actually. The problem is they're far between. They're sandwiched between gags that go on too long and aren't very funny and are just kind of obnoxious, like you would expect. But the movie is not mean-spirited like you would expect, you know, an Adam Sandler type of film. It is kind of sweet. The major unfortunate thing, though, is that the women in the film aren't given much to do. They're pretty much just, you know, plot devices. So there's not much going on at that with that aspect. This is definitely a male-centric movie aimed at men only. So it's not, you know, there will be far worse comedies than this. I know it's kind of being used as the punching bag for January releases. But let's wait till next week when we see the J-Lo movie. Because this one, I don't think, you know, just taking a guess, this one might not feel bad after that one. Who knows? So I don't recommend it outright. You know, if it's on cable, please stick around. You'll laugh a few times. But this is definitely not one to rush out and go see. But you could do a heck of a lot worse, I think.
Okay. So. All right. That's the Wedding Ringer. All right, Eric, tell us about Black Hat.
Okay. Well, as we mentioned earlier, this is the latest thriller from Michael Mann, and it stars Chris Hemsworth as a cyber hacker who has been in jail for many years for bank robbery. It was the only gig he could get after an early stint in prison after his days in I think MIT, if I'm not mistaken. There's a bigger cyber hacker on the loose, and he has tapped into a Chinese nuclear plant and caused a disruption there. Based on what happens there, ends up driving up the price of soy on the global market and makes a killing off of it. So a Chinese investigator who went to school with Chris Hemsworth's character manages to get him out of prison to help them track down the cyber bully, if you will, before he can strike again. One of the American operatives, played by Viola Davis, there's also the Chinese character's sister, played by Wei Tang from Ang Lee's Lust Caution. The two of them develop a relationship as they're hunting down this character who is not, you know, this movie doesn't really sort of play up as sort of a mystery in a way. You know, the identity of the cyber hacker is sort of incidental. It's more of a MacGuffin in a way. This is a film that should crackle with a lot of energy. It's a film that should have a sort of a time clock sort of situation going for it. It's a film that you know, wants to play up how smart it is sometimes with some of its cyber jargon. But to me, you know, as misfires go, this is as big as they come. Michael Mann is a filmmaker who I have not been on board with since 1999's The Insider. I have not felt that a number of his films have really hit the mark over the years, and especially since Collateral, he's been really favoring this digital video cinematography that is often very grainy, and he, you know, especially you know, a lot of outdoor scenes where he's trying to be very stylistic, and it, you know, just, it looks like grainy video at times. Stylistic choice that I'm not a big fan of, but this film has bigger problems than its cinematography. It's a film that, over 2 hours long, is a surprising slog. This is a film that never develops any sort of energy in its chase. Whether the villain has an identity or not, it's a villain that never really captures our attention. It's not a villain that we even care if they get caught. Yes, you know, the way he's sort of manipulating things is more like a very bad boring Bond villain rather than someone who is sort of endangering our livelihood, which is where I think a lot of people thought that this film was going to sort of tackle upon the idea that cyber terrorists can really cause some serious damage out there. So that being said, watching Hemsworth and these other characters sort of fumble about throughout the movie trying to catch this guy, it just sort of amounts to nothing. It has the big artillery action sequences that Michael Mann has been accustomed to ever since Heat in a way, and those films, those sequences certainly liven up things, and there's certainly some quality kills in this film. But outside of those quality kills, there is really nothing of substance or interest or anything to latch onto. And I think this is Michael Mann's worst film to date by quite some margin. I was bored throughout this movie. I was falling asleep an hour into it. I think this is an awful, awful movie.
Wow. Okay. Hang on, everybody. We're going to come back, and Colin and I will give our thoughts. And Eric and Colin, hang on. We've got more coming up right here on 720 WGN. Yes. Movie reviews continue. Lots to talk about on this Monday morning with Eric Childress and Colin Suter. We're reviewing all the new movies. And you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. The phone number is 312-981-7200. We are in the middle of reviewing Michael Mann's latest movie, Black Hat, which Eric just reviewed and was not at all fond of. And we welcome these guys back. Hello, Colin. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Welcome back. And Colin, what did you think of Black Hat?
Kind of on the other, I'm definitely on the other side of the fence on this one. I really enjoyed it, much to my surprise. I'm with Eric on Michael Mann. I'm, you know, not a big Michael Mann fan. I have the same reaction to seeing one of his films as I do seeing a new Ridley Scott film. I'm just not that interested, or I haven't really been since The Insider. I like Collateral. It's good, but I'm not in awe of it like some people are. And his choice of using digital video has also, you know, not been my favorite choice. But this, I think it works. I think, I think he's found, you know, a script that is, you know, that suits his style, because I think this is just a chase film, and it doesn't. I don't think it pretends to be anything more than that. And as such, I was on board for the ride. As far as villains go, yeah, I agree. It's not the most exciting villain in the world, but when you're dealing with cyber terrorism, I think it's kind of good that you don't really see the villain right away, and I think it's meant to be that way for that reason, because you know they're supposed to be kind of, you know, ghosts pretty much. Some of the action scenes I think are pretty terrific. One in particular that I found interesting, the one that takes place in a restaurant, where it sounded like Mann was, you know, there's a big fight scene in there between Helmsworth and I think three other guys. And it seemed like Mann was using the original source sound for that. And it sounded real. It sounded like the most realistic sounding fist fight, you know, I've heard in a movie in quite some time, which I thought was pretty cool. So, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's interesting to me that people are really... that the critics are really divided on this one, like majorly divided, just like we are tonight. Eric absolutely hates it, and then there's the rest of us who are kind of giving it, you know, like a 3.5-star kind of review, which is kind of what I'm giving it. There doesn't seem to be much in the way of middle ground on this one. There were a lot of walkouts at the screening I went to, so who knows? I guess I could see, you know, this movie, you know, pretty much bombed over the weekend. Nevertheless... I still enjoy it, much to my surprise. I was expecting to be bored, and I wasn't.
You know, I'm with you, Colin. I thought this movie was pretty terrific, and I think it's his best movie. I'm a big fan of Collateral. I really love Collateral, and I think it's his best movie since Collateral. It moves. I was with it from the beginning. And yeah, I mean, it's not the greatest villain in the world, but man, there were sequences in this movie that just really, really worked, and it's the most, I mean, you know, because Michael Mann's movies have a tendency to be pretentious, if you guys know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like this air of like, I'm a great filmmaker.
Yeah.
That kind of an attitude. I didn't see that at all in this one. I think it's his least pretentious movie to date. And I thought Hemsworth was good in it. I thought it was very exciting. I thought it was well made. And there were some really terrific action sequences in it. So overall, I really, really liked it. And I was surprised because I went in with really low expectations. I'm with you guys. You know, I think Michael Mann, you know, has made some good movies. I think Thief is a great film. I'm not a fan of Heat. I'm like the only person I know. Everybody loves that movie, and I'm not a big fan of Heat.
Which to me is sort of the quintessential Michael Mann film. Well, in all its greatness and its flaws.
Yeah, I mean, for
what everyone thinks of Michael Mann, that's the movie that I think embodies everything that everyone loves and hates about Michael Mann.
I can see that. Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, it does have one of the greatest shootouts in the history of film in it.
Mm-hmm.
The shootout in the streets is unbelievable, and remains, I think, the high watermark of any sequence that Michael Mann has directed. I will give you that, because I mean that is incredible stuff. But he's capable of doing a lot of really great action sequences, and I think there's a bunch of them in this movie. So I really liked it. I was very, very surprised at how much I really enjoyed it. So we're split on this one, man. So now, yeah. So it really is dividing people, right? This movie.
Yeah, I mean the early reviews that started trickling out after the first screen in New York, which I think happened on Monday, we saw it here on Tuesday. Were very negative, and then the reviews I heard out of here in Chicago were quite positive, and I hadn't even heard Colin's review until tonight.
Yeah.
And then I went and saw it at a matinee yesterday. And I'm not joking. I mean, I was looking for it. I'm like, okay, you know, Michael Mann, you know, I know the people who love Michael Mann really love Michael Mann.
Yes, they do.
So I didn't know what to expect. So I went in sort of on the fence, kind of fresh. And an hour in, I was dozing off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's our review. We're split. Eric didn't like it. Colin and I both did like Black Hat, which nobody went to see anyway. So, sorry. So, all right. Well, let's see. Colin,
mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us about Still Alice?
All right. So, Julianne Moore, who's up for Best Actress and will likely win, plays a linguistics professor. She's three kids. They're all grown up and, you know, moved out for the most part, and she has a good life. She's happily married to her husband, played by Alec Baldwin, and she's a success at what she does. But suddenly she starts forgetting things, really simple things. Things like people's names. You know, she blacks out during her lectures. She doesn't come home when she usually does because she forgets to. And they see a doctor about all this, and she receives a pretty grim prognosis. She has early onset Alzheimer's, and it's only going to get worse, of course. The movie flashes forward, I think, I want to say a few months or a year later. I saw this movie like a month and a half ago. And, you know, she doesn't have her job anymore, and her husband and one of her daughters, played by Kristen Stewart, have to wait on her and make sure she doesn't leave the house and get lost. Knowing that she's going to one day forget everything, she makes videos of herself telling her future forgetful self important things that she needs to know. But, you know, it's Alzheimer's. It's going to get worse. So this is a movie that joins the ranks of films that we've been reviewing for the past couple months, biopics and the like, that fall under the category of great performance, so-so, or not very good film. And that's definitely the case here. This is a movie anchored by Moore's performance. It's a well-deserved nomination. And I think Kristen Stewart and Alec Baldwin are very good, too. Unfortunately, the movie itself is so stale and so just by the numbers lifetime movie of the week material. Strangely enough, I mean, it's directed by two guys, you know, who have directed movies together before. But still, this feels like it was kind of handed off to a director for hire who, you know, didn't really put anything into it other than, you know, well, we have Julianne Moore, she'll carry the film, and, you know, we'll just follow the script and everything will be fine. It's unfortunate because she gives a performance that deserves a better film. So this is, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's downer material anyway. And so it's, you know, I hate to steer people away from a great Julianne Moore performance, but because she is worth watching in the film, definitely. But it just kind of doesn't amount to much as a theatrical experience. So it's, you know, kind of not quite recommend it.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah. I mean, amongst all the categories it's going to fall under that Colin already mentioned, it's also going to fall into the category of good performance that ends up getting the makeup Oscar for the wrong movie. I mean, we all love Julianne Moore. We think she's one of the greats, and she's definitely good here. It's not very rare that we see Julianne Moore give a bad performance, although, you know, Seventh Son is coming out. yeah. And just watching, you know, her performance very closely, you could easily get, you know, you sort of separate yourself from what is kind of a not a particularly strong dramatic treatment of the disease. I mean, we've seen films that have dealt with Alzheimer's patients before. I look at Sarah Paul's terrific Away From Her from a few years ago that got Julie Christie a nomination for playing an Alzheimer's patient. I think that is a film that takes a really terrific approach to the material, while finding room for obviously a great lead female performance as well. This one, like Colin said, is very sort of Lifetime, you know, movie of the week. You know, you get your diagnosis, you go through the struggle. One thing I think Julianne Moore does very well early in the film is sort of represent the frightened aspect of being aware of having such a disease. I thought, you know, there's a scene with her and Alec Baldwin very early in the film that I think has the kind of power and emotional weight that the film wants us to have towards the end. But by then, it's, you know, we've sort of been put through the motions of, you know, stuff that we've seen before. As much as I like Julianne Moore, I think she's given better performances. I think that, you know, she even relies upon a couple tricks that she's used in the past, even in that scene that I mentioned. It's just a good performance. It's not a particularly good movie. One of the directors that Colin mentions, I believe he actually has ALS, and it really sort of took hold of him just as they were starting to make the movie. Julianne Moore talked about that on The Daily Show last week. But even that being said, it's still not a particularly good film with a really good performance.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this one. It does feel like a sort of a Hallmark movie. But I really think Julianne Moore is terrific. Actually, I think all the acting is good in this film. The acting in the movie, this script doesn't deserve the performances that were given in this movie. And I think Julianne Moore is great. And, you know, maybe this isn't the role that she should win an Academy Award for, but, man, she's never won one.
No.
And, you know, and it's Julianne Moore. For God's sake. I mean, you know, I mean, how many amazing performances has Julianne Moore given? And we know, you know, that the Oscars are about like timing and politics, and sometimes people win Academy Awards for the wrong movies. And maybe this is the case here, but, but I'm not denying that she's terrific in this movie because I think she is great. And I don't necessarily know whether she deserves it more than Reese Witherspoon. But
he doesn't.
But she's great in the movie, and she's Julianne Moore, so I'm happy for her. It's not a very good movie. I'm with you guys like 100% on this one. We agree 100% on this one. I think it's a terrific performance in a not a very good movie. Now, is this all over the place, or is it just in a couple of theaters?
Oh, I think it's just a couple theaters.
Just in a couple of theaters. So,
yeah, it wasn't wide enough to make it in Chicago this week, but it's probably in the same theaters that
I'm looking right now. It's in three theaters.
Right.
So if people want to see it, River East, Landmark Century, and Evanston. So the same three theaters.
The usual three.
The usual three. Exactly right. All right. Well, there you go. We didn't get a chance to review everything. Like 2 days, one night, where Marianne Cotillard snuck in there and got an Oscar nomination for that. Really quickly,
good
Eric.
Good movie. People should go see it.
Good movie. Eric, what'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little bit repetitive, but talk about a great performance in a much better film than Still okay. Alice. That's the one.
Okay. Marianne Cotillard, we all love her. She's terrific. What do we got next week?
Next week, I'll be in Sundance.
Oh, okay. Week.
Yeah, so got a little bit going on for that. And, geez, what is opening next week?
Next door.
Which one?
Boy Next Door with
Vince. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. It's the week that, yeah, here's why I've forgotten. They're not screening two of the three movies.
I know. I want to see Mordecai. Mordecai, the commercials for Mordecai crack me up.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It's not being screened for critics.
I'm
shocked by this.
I don't know, man. I laugh out loud during those commercials for Mordecai.
This is one of the films that Lionsgate announced was going to be part of their new franchise program, and they were hoping to make a franchise out of this thing.
Wow.
And they're not screening
it for critics.
So this is not, that's not good.
All right, well, we'll get some.
And it's even weirder. It's directed by David Kep.
I know. It's just so strange. All right, well, you guys, thanks a lot. Eric, have a great trip. We'll talk to you from Sundance.
Yes, you will.
All right, you guys, take care. There's Eric, there's Alrighty. Colin, and we'll talk to you guys next week.